Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2014. Lecture 10, delivered on February 18, 2014. The title of this lecture is Business Risk.
Today, business risk. One of the many problems with running a business or having a business owning shares in a business is that your sales are volatile. They will go up and they will go down for a number of reasons. One, of course, is the economic times. And then there's also competitive entry, competitive exit that will cause your sales revenue to go up or down, or down or up. There are other reasons, too. Sometimes it's actually just kind of like a mystery. Why didn't we have a good week this week, or what was going on? Sometimes it's just the weather. Suddenly there's a stupid Midwest snowstorm, and no one goes out to buy stuff. But volatility in sales is going to be part of your landscape. And it would be nice to be able to measure that and have some idea of projecting for the future with some degree of, okay, how certain are we that our sales will be in this band or that band? And we'll talk about that briefly here in a little while. Our usual measure, just a raw measure of risk, volatility, that is a standard deviation. And I'll remind you of the formula for that here in just a few minutes again. But it gets worse. As you go down the financial statement, either the accounting version or the real version, you notice something that goes on as you go move down the line. Imagine, if you will, someone who wears shades, yeah, deal with it. You have all of your bills are pegged to your income. If your income goes up, then a bigger percentage is taken out. If your income goes down, a smaller percentage is taken out. And that makes, wouldn't that be a kind of a nice way to have it work? As opposed to these flat expenses, you're going to pay it regardless of how much you made last week or last month or last year. We have two kinds of expenses. Variable expenses, the ones that are pretty much going to run up and down with your sales. And then you have these nasties that are fixed expenses. They don't go up and down with your sales. They just sit there like a block waiting to kick your butt. In our personal lives, this can be a problem. Of course, you can, if your income goes down far enough, you will be in default. Same with a business. Interestingly, one of the phenomena that has occurred, well, it's been occurring for some time, but you see it in your personal lives, is software that is subscription-based. Microsoft, Adobe, you have to pay a fixed amount of money to them. In other words, the company no longer has to bear a risk of their sales going up and down. They transfer the risk to you. You have to pay a flat amount or you don't get to use their product. That's nice for them. That actually is bad for you. In the business world, outsourcing is a way to remove a business risk of fixed expenses. You see, because if I have workers and I have facilities to do certain things, that represents a fixed cost to me. But if I can outsource that to someplace in China or to India or to wherever, then it's no longer a fixed expense on my books. I can hire them if I want. I don't need them. I can send an order to do something less, tell them to do less, pay less. So in a way, the American worker suffers because a risk is being transferred off the shoulders of business and to someplace else in the world so that it is no longer a fixed expense. Think about it this way. There's a fast food chain that is now in the early stages of having a drive-through where there's no one there to take your order. Because when you speak into the microphone, it goes to a call center in India where they take the order, type it in, and then it appears on the computers at the place where you're ordering it. It is fixed there somewhat by robotics, more and more so as time goes on, that will be the case. And then at the window, someone just walks up and hands you your order. In other words, there's not all that fixed expense of the telecommunications equipment, the people who will take the orders, do all that kind of stuff. It's all done somewhere else by a company that is not the fast food company, which kind of creeps you out. You're ordering, and your order is actually taken by someone in another country. But anyway, here is how we measure risk in business and how we... Partly of this is so that we can say, all right, where are the sources of our risk, our volatility? So the first thing we have to do is create a model of the future, a probability distribution of what's going to happen in the next period. And we're not going to do it as a certainty. We're going to do it, as I said, as a probability distribution. So we could have everything from an excellent year coming up to a really bad. And we'll do this as a three-part thing. I'm going to have to give myself a little more room here. Okay. And we're going to look at our sales. And we're going to break this into five. Okay, we could have a great year or a really bad year. We could have a good year or a not good year in the middle. And then we could have something in the middle, something you might call meh. And let's talk about our sales. In the straight up year, if the year is just like meh, we would, let's say, have $50,000 of sales. In a good year, it would be $55,000. In an excellent year, it would be $60,000. In a not good year, it would be $45,000. In a total suckitude year, it would be $40,000. Notice that I'm going to give you a symmetric distribution here. Okay, now. Let's say our cost of goods sold. How would I want to do that? Say it's, in the real bad year, it's $12,000. Five times three, 15,000. Well, no, three. Yeah, 15. 3,000 more would be 18. Okay, I'm working this out here. 13,500 and 16,500. So the cost of goods sold in the really bad year would be 12,000. Not good year would be 13,500. In the middling year would be 15,000. In a good year, 16,500. In an excellent year, 18,000. Notice that this is a variable expense. In this case, it's 30% of your sales, cost of goods sold. And I will use that as the example of a variable expense for this. So we get our gross profit or gross income. Well, this is not the best place. You have that Sharpie? Yeah, I'm going to write on that, and then they're going to yell at me about writing on their glass. Gross is going to be 28. In this case, it would be 0051315, is that right? And then 35,000, and then good, 005, 14 minus 6 is 8, 4 minus 1 is 3, and then 60,000 minus 18,000, 42,000. Okay. So that's the, I don't know if you can read that very well, but now we would get to the point where we would do SG&A, sales, general, and administrative expenses. And let's assume those are going to be a fixed amount. No matter what, you can change those, but it's not that easy to change them in a year for some businesses. So we're going to just take the SG&As as being sales, general, and administrative expenses, sort of being a flat amount of money. And let's say that that's $15,000. Regardless of the sales level that you have. And that gets us to operating income, EBIT, which in this case would be $13,000. And then we would have, mother of God, I'm going to do this without, so I don't make a mistake here. Talking and doing this at the same time as asking for it with me are minus 15,000, 16,5, 35 minus 15 would be 20, 38,500. Minus 15,000 would be 23,5. And then we would have 42 minus 15 would be, 27. I was about to put 28, thank you. Okay. EBIT. Now I'm going to give you a couple of terms here. The volatility up here, as we will measure it, is called sales volatility. Duh. This volatility, once we calculate it with the metric that we're going to use, which is the coefficient of variation, this coefficient of variation here will be identical to the sales volatility. In other words, the coefficient of variation is not affected by variable costs. That's what we like about this one, is that it is, the term we use is robust. It is robust to variable cost. So this coefficient of variation, CV, which is standard deviation divided by mean, will not change from the sales line to the gross income line. But then it will change when we go down here. Fixed costs are going to cause the volatility here to be larger. The coefficient of variation at the operating income, that is the EBIT line, is going to be bigger than the coefficient of variation up here. That coefficient of variation down here, operating income, that's called business risk. That's what we call the business risk. It is a big one with us. And something else that's big is the difference in the coefficient of variation in operating income versus gross income We call that the contribution of operating leverage. The contribution of operating leverage. In other words, the fact is that the fixed costs are magnifying volatility. The amount by which they do that is what we call the contribution of operating leverage. In other words, how much do the fixed costs increase the risk of our business? Again, how much do the fixed costs increase the risk of our business? I could ask the same thing. You could actually do this for yourself. How much do the fixed costs in your monthly budget increase your risk? They're going to do it, and the more of them you take on, the more risk you have as a person, as a business of your own. So every time you take on, oh yeah, I'll subscribe to that, that's a fixed cost, that's a risk increase. Yeah, I'll buy a car, I can handle those payments, that's a fixed cost, that's an increase in your risk. Every time you say, oh, well, yeah, I really do want to get Microsoft Office 365, yeah, it's not that much every month, it is a contribution to your business risk. Everything that's fixed is going to blow up your risks. Now, some of your expenses are variable in your own lives. I'm trying to think, what would be a variable expense in your life? Oh, no, you're stuck. You buy that. Don't you subscribe to, like, Comcast or Frontier or something like that? It doesn't matter. You're stuck with it. You are stuck with that bill. That is a risk increase. Something that is actually, yeah. Food. I mean, in a good month, I'll eat good food. In a bad month, it's ramen noodles. And, you know, yeah. Booze, well, let's not push it. Yeah, yeah, the quality of your booze, maybe. Yeah. It's either something really good, you know, Sam Adams on a good month, and it's Earp Light in a bad month, something like that. Yeah, that's actually something, too. We do tend to try to handle some fixed costs. Would you go without toilet paper? Fixed cost. You can modify it by either going with Charmin or with the sandpaper stuff, but there is a fixed component under it. Laundry, you're probably going to want. You're going to think, I got to do laundry. And those will be fixed. Other variable costs, interestingly enough, driving to a certain extent, travel and all that. But interestingly, many of our expenses are fixed, and the more we subscribe to, the more that we get ourselves committed to, it's a fixed cost. Someday you'll be married. Big fixed cost for both partners, interestingly enough. And the kids, you know, there are some things I can chintz on in a bad month, you know, like food, diapers, yeah, I know, but I washed it, kid. Put it back on. It was disposable, but what the hell. Okay. Now, at the EBIT line, if you remember what we did in the accounting review, the next line here would be your interest payments. Interest payments are also a fixed cost. Because you're going to pay your interest or the debt holders are going to kick your butt. So let's say that that is $3,000 a month in interest, or a year rather, in interest payments. So then we get to the EBT line, earnings before taxes. So in this case, EBT would be $10,000. $16,500 minus $3,000 would be $13,500. $20,000. Wait. Am I smoking crack? What's wrong with this? Okay. Okay, I'm okay. For some reason, that just did not look right. I don't know why. And then $24,000. Again, though, that's a fixed cost. It's not a business expense per se. It's not like something that creates creates your goods. It's something you borrowed and you're using it to build stuff or whatever, but it's not a business expense. And so we consider it differently. But it will make EBT volatility even bigger than business volatility. And so we say that the difference between EBT volatility and the operating income volatility is the contribution of financial leverage. Another source of risk a business faces. It's not the risk that's caused by fixed operating costs, those things that you have to have, they're there to make the product. But it is nevertheless going to increase the risk of the business. Now, normally, we consider the taxes, at least to some extent, even in a progressive system, are a proportional thing. As a matter of fact, we usually say taxes are 30% of net income, of EBT, or something like that. So what will happen is, regardless of what tax that I give you in here, it will not affect the volatility of net income. The volatility of net income will be the volatility of earnings before taxes. Don't let me bluff you on that. That one's an easy one. The volatility of net income will be the same as the volatility of earnings before taxes. Because we consider taxes to be a variable, you know, 30%, 25% of income. So because it's a variable, it's not going to magnify risk. Only fixed costs magnify risk. Now, understand, though, interestingly, if your business has to pay licenses and things like that, that would. Like, for example, in my business, this is a bad time because I get hit with these flat franchise tax, this tax, that tax, and those are fixed. So those actually do, but we kind of ignore those in this simplified example. Okay, let me go back and do one thing here. We need to assign probabilities to the world economics or to our business economic states. This is done quite commonly, even in businesses that are not big at all. We tend to go like, this is not that unusual, what's called a five-state scenario, but we have to assign probabilities. And if I were to say, okay, a probability distribution that I would personally go with right now would probably do about 50% okay, not spectacular or anything like that. And I would assign about a 20% to a boom year and 20% to a bust year, and then 5% to an unbelievably good year and 5% to an unbelievably bad year. This is kind of an art. But once you're in business, or if you do this kind of stuff very commonly, you get a good feel for where the economy is headed. And also, there, if you don't want to try it, there are plenty of services that will give you probabilities like this. You can find them very easily. My assessment right now is about on track with the general assessment that we're going to have a, you know, it's nothing horrible or bad or anything like that. 50% chance that this 2014 is going to be decent, nothing great. And then there's 20% chance of not good or very good, and then 5% chance of real bad or real good. So here we go. How do we do this? The first thing we'll have to do, I'm going to write a couple of formulas down. And then for God's sake, if you actually use these formulas, you deserve to make a mistake in the arithmetic. Because you can do some real unbelievable shortcuts. Trust me on this. First of all, we're going to need the mean of the distribution. Now, notice that I created a symmetric distribution. It will follow the rules of normal distributions. So I can have a couple of nice simplifications right there. But the mean, and I'm going to write the formula for it, is the sum, from k equals 1 to n of the p sub k times the cash flow at k. Now, this looks really impressive. I would recommend it, getting it as a tattoo. Seriously. On your buttock. Because when she sees it, she'll want to see what's on the other one, which will be this standard deviation formula. This is so fancy. All it says is take the probability of each event times the event, add them up. 0.05 times 40,000 plus 0.20 times 45,000 plus 0.50 times 50,000 plus 0.20 times 55,000 plus 0.05 times 60,000. That's all it says to do. That nice fancy little formula with the summation sign. But there's something even easier you can do. Because I don't need to do the calculation. I can tell you right now that the mean of this distribution will be $50,000. I know it. It's a symmetric distribution, and if it's a symmetric distribution, the mean is the center value. So if you, I mean, if you want to be butch and calculated, you know, go for it. But you don't have to. Just find the mean, the middle value, and you got it. That's all there is to it. Nothing hard. Now, the next one that you'll need is the butch one, the standard deviation, sigma, which is the square root of the sum, oops, my sigmas aren't looking good today, from k equals 1 to n, of the probability of event k times the cash flow at k minus the mean squared. In other words, you take each cash flow minus the mean, square it, times by the probability, add them up, and then take the square root. Don't take the square root first, you'll get it wrong. The danger on this formula is, of course, making a stupid little arithmetic mistake or forgetting to put in a parenthesis. So there's a way. But we'll talk about that. In this case, in other words, I would take 50,000 minus 40,000 squared times 0.05 plus 50,000 minus 45,000. Well, I'm saying that backwards. It doesn't matter, but let me say it correctly. I would take 40,000 minus 50,000, square it, times 0.05, plus 45,000 minus 50,000, squared, times 0.20, plus 50,000 minus 50,000, squared, times 0.50, plus, and I'm going to do this whole thing out so it gets a rest while I'm doing this, plus 55,000 minus 50,000 squared times 0.20, plus 60,000 minus 50,000 squared times 0.05, and then once I'd added all those up, I would take the square root and I would have the standard deviation. Now let me show you something here. If I can actually do this in this tiny space, I would do 0.05 times 40,000 minus 50,000 squared plus 0.20 times 45,000. And I promise if you know what I'm about to do here in a minute, you will never have to see this formula quite this bad expanded again. Plus 0.50 times 50,000 minus 50,000 squared plus 0.20 times 55,000 minus 50,000 squared plus 0.05 times 60,000 minus 50,000 squared. And you take the square root of that whole mofo there. What the hell was that? At my age, when you hear music, you think it's angels coming to call you home and then send you down to hell. Okay, look. I want you to look at something here. First things first. Do you notice that 50,000 minus 50,000 is zero? Duh. So we never have to do the middle term because the middle term is always going to be the mean minus itself. It's always going to be. So you never have to do that one. But there's also something else. Do you see that 0.05 times 40,000 minus 50,000 squared is going to be the same as 0.05 times 60,000 minus 50,000 squared? Do you see that? Let me make sure you see that. So I really, and I also, do you see that 0.20 times 45,000 minus 50,000 squared is the same as 0.20 times 55,000 minus 50,000 squared. The squared takes away the negative. You see that? In other words, if I just take the last two, do those, and then multiply it by two, for God's sake, before I take the square root, I've done it. Let me say that again. All you ever have to do is take the ones on one side and then multiply the result by two to cover the other side, which is the same, and then take the square root. Let me make sure you see that, because you will be going until the cows come home if you do all the whole thing. But if you do it this way, you've reduced what could be a disaster if you make a little mistake down to a much more compact problem. Again, you're never going to need to do the center one because it's always going to be zero. And the ones on the end are just repeats of the ones at the beginning. So if you do the ones on the end and then just take two times that result, add them up and then take two times it, you've covered the other side of the formula. That reduces the complexity of this phenomenally. And then all you have to do, don't forget to take the square root after you multiply by 2, for God's sake. On. And I'm going to do this real quick, and I would really appreciate it if you would make sure that I do it right and make sure you can do it. Point 2, I'm going to just do this straight. Square root. Okay, square root. And it opened the parentheses for me. Okay, now, open parentheses. Wait. 0.2, well, I'm not even going to try it in one calculation because I always screw it up, and I'm a math major. Okay, 0.2 times, open parenthesis, 55,000 minus 50,000 squared plus 0.05 times the quantity 60,000 minus 50,000 and survey says square that, and then I'm going to say equals. That should come up with what? Is that 10 million? I'll let you catch up. 10 million? Okay. Now, don't forget to multiply that thing by 2. Don't forget to multiply that thing by 2. Times 2. And that gets me 20 million. Now, do you know that? I don't know if you know the trick. You've got that 20 million on your calculator. In your next step, just hit second square root and then hit second answer and hit enter. Did you know you can do that? 4,472 $4.14 is the standard deviation. 4,472.14 is your standard deviation. Did you get that? I got $4,472.14. Is that what you got? And if it isn't, multiply by the page number. See if that works. Okay, that was not helpful. Now I'm going to write something down here. The mean is, what did I find the mean was $50,000? And the standard deviation is $4,472.14. Now, before I do the coefficient of variation, which is very easy at the end of this, something I want to point out. The 50,000 is actually kind of obvious. That's what we expect to happen. That's how you're going to interpret the mean. The standard deviation carries information that is important to us in itself. Because I'm just testing your ass. $4,472.14. Boy, that would have been a tight distribution. Look, here's what this means, and it's actually something that I've seen businesses use this. It's actually kind of a nice little trick. In probability theory, you took a stats course, probably wondered, where the hell would I ever use this? Here's a place where you actually might use it. You see, a normal distribution, which we always assume unless we're real masochists, has this feature that if I take the mean minus the standard deviation up to the mean plus the standard deviation, and maybe put those in parentheses, there is a 95% chance that my actual cash flow at the sales line will be in there for the year. That is useful to me. So in other words, if I were to take 50,000 minus $44,720, I would get $45,527. And if I took the mean plus that standard deviation, 50,000 plus $4,472.14, I'd get $54,472 about. There's a 95% chance that my sales will land in that region. There's a 95% chance that I'll land in that region. Let me tell you how much I care about that. Because let's say that, okay, if I don't pull in $44,000 this year, I'm dead. I'm out of business. I can look at this number right here and I can now say, okay, there's a 95% chance I'll survive for the year. That's what the standard deviation does. It's just from probability theory. This 95%, it is the case that a distribution that is normal from the mean minus the standard deviation up to the mean plus the standard deviation, there will be a 95% chance that reality will happen in that band. Even more than that, I can now also, from, again, probability theory, of normal distributions, from the mean minus two standard deviations up to the mean plus two standard deviations, Well, yeah. Did I say, I'm saying 95%, aren't I? God, thank you. This one's 95%. Gee, zooey. I would say 95%. You're right, 67%. And then 95% is two standard deviations. And then, God, three standard deviations. 99%. Okay, there you go. That's better. I was going to say, I don't have that good a chance of succeeding. Let me tell you, the actual one that I ran for next year, and I'll give you kind of general ballpark numbers, I've got about, the expected value is about 36,000. The standard deviation is around 8,000. About 8,000. So I can actually say there's a 67% chance that I'll be between $28,000 and $44,000 next year. There's a bigger chance that I'll be in a wider band, $45,000. Well, let me do $50,000 minus 2 times 44,7214. That'd be $41,055. Well, $56. You can round these to the dollar because you're doing estimates anyway. Up to $50,000 plus $44,7214. $54,472.14. So there's a 95% chance that I'm going to be between about $41,000 and $54,000. And then there's a 99% chance that I'm going to be between $50,000 minus 3 times 44,7214, which would be 36,584, and 50,000 plus 3 times 44,7214, which would come out to be 63,416. And again, I mean, these don't even worry about the pennies because these are estimates anyway. But this is something that we can use to get a sense. Okay, is there something that we just have to achieve? Yeah.
For the second one, it looks like you only added one standard deviation.
Yeah, I guess I did. I am just not. I'm still on those meds, and I'm thinking I'm really doing bad. Maybe I'll have to call class today. No, that's okay, teacher, really. Plus two. Yeah. You're right. Looking back at it, okay, 44,7214. Yeah, you're right, absolutely. Watch my arithmetic today. I am in bad shape. 58 probably should work for Bank of America. 58,944. Okay. Yeah. But again, this is something that is useful to at least say, okay, what are my chances? There's some threshold I've got to achieve. What are my chances of achieving it? And on the upside, this also gives me a way to know, okay, I would like to do a capital expenditure next year, but I'm not going to be able to do that unless I make more than, let's say, $55,000. Okay, well, in that case, there is about a 2/3 chance that I'll be able to do that capital expenditure next year. It gives me one of my first tools for my budgeting, my capital planning, or at least my shorter term capital planning. And almost all companies do these kinds of projections. And the real weakness, of course, is back up here. What are your probabilities you assign, and what is your cash flow based upon those probabilities? Well, the hardest one of all, of course, actually, interestingly enough, I'll tell you a little about how the real world of that works. These things like cost of goods sold, what you usually will do is look at what your percentage was for the last couple of years. That's how you project that one. So as long as your cost of goods is fairly stable over a period of years, the cost of goods sold line is actually going to be fairly well established. It won't be wrong. Also, your SG&As, I mean, you're in control. Your management in control. You will determine what those are. If you say this is what they're going to be and they don't show up to be that, that's a failure of management. So this line should be pretty well, you're not going to be wrong about that by much. Similarly, interest. Taxes, you know damn well you're going to be taxed. The place where the mistake could happen is in your projections of your sales and of your probabilities of the different states of the world. That's where the mistake could be. But if you are good at that, and there are the standard models, some of them, they're called time series. Were you taught time series in your stats class? Did they show you time series? It's not all that hard to do. I mean, and computers do it. I mean, even Excel will do a time series for you. And so, actually, it's not all that mysterious what's going to happen. The thing that kills us, macroeconomic environment. The microenvironment actually doesn't hurt too much. We can predict that not too badly, especially in some industries. It's the macro environment that scares the hell out of us. That's why one of the things that we really want out of our government is stability. Not low taxes, not high taxes. We want a stable tax environment. We don't want spending cuts, starve out the welfare recipients, or we'd blow up the budget with spending tons of money on lazy people and big wars. We want stability. You see, because if we can have a stable macroeconomic environment, that makes our ability to project sales that much better. That reduces our risk. So notwithstanding what you hear from the loud mouths of politics and the loud mouths of certain businesses and ideologies on the left and right, what we really want is stability, because that gives us one of the big keys so that we can make these projections here with some degree of confidence that we're going to be wrong, but we're not going to be way wrong. It's when you have things that no one could imagine, like a zombie apocalypse. That's when it gets difficult. But there are ways to deal with that too. And you know what I mean. Cardio, double tap, things like that. Plenty of Twinkies. No coconut puffballs. It's not the taste, it's the consistency. Okay. Now, coefficient of variation. Let me back this up. Went down a little bit too far. Here's our beauty. The coefficient of variation. CV will be the standard deviation divided by the mean. Oh. Sorry. This is our measure of risk. This is our measure of risk. The thing about this one is that from one business to another, it compares apples to apples. It's a percentage. So in other words, I can compare a company with $50,000 in sales to a company with $50 million in sales, because it will come out to be a percentage. These risk measures will. Now, what I'm going to do tonight, I'm going to put up a practice problem for you with a template so that you can just go through and fill in the numbers so that you can do this very comfortably. And then when it gets to the exam, you'll have one of these, but that will be part of what I give you two nights before the test. so that you should be able to do it like a boss and do it on the test, although God knows every time, 20, 40 students. I didn't have enough time to do that on the test. Dude, it was there 2 days before the test. Well, why didn't you tell me? Because I did in class, and it was an announcement in ReggieNet. Never mind. It will be there, okay, for God's sake. And I'm going to give you the practice tonight. And also, this template, you can print this out several times, the template, so that you can do it for any problem that you would have. So here's what I'm looking for each part. You're going to have the sales. Well, let me take this down a little bit. You're going to have your sales line. And I'll give you the sales and the probabilities, okay? And then you're going to have a minus the variable costs. Think of those as cost of goods sold. And then you're going to have this sales minus variable cost line, which is like gross income. And then you're going to have your minus your fixed costs. And that will take you to your operating income. And I'll give you how to do the numbers. I'll say variable costs are 30% of sales. Fixed costs are $18,000. I'll give you all that. And then this is your EBIT line, operating income. So then minus, you'll take off your interest expense. And I'll give you your interest expense. And then that will drive you down to your earnings before taxes. And then I'll give you a tax rate. And that will take you to your net income line. Now what you're going to do is you're going to find the mean for sales, the mean for gross, the mean for operating income, the mean for EBT, and the mean for net income. You'll do the same for standard deviation, and you will then be able to get your coefficient of variation. Don't do every stupid line. Just do the ones, and the template will have sort of like gray shaded. Don't do a CV here. Don't do a standard deviation. You're not going to have to do all of those. But there's something that I want you to do as you're going along. You'll be calculating these things, and it's not hard. It's just kind of tedious, but I've shown you how to do it a little faster. But you're going to see some interesting patterns emerge. Like, for example, this CV right here is going to be the same as this CV right here. So you really don't have to calculate the CV twice, because you know that if all you're doing is taking away variable costs, the CV will not change. That means that you know right away that the CV at EBT will be the same as a CV at net income, because all you're doing is taking away a variable cost. So you don't have to calculate it. As a matter of fact, you don't have... Yeah, go ahead. Oh, yeah, yeah. Because otherwise you're going to do stupid probabilities. 0, 0, 100%, 0, and 0. I can see you doing that, okay? You do understand that would make the problem what we call trivial. And then you could start playing Flappy Bird again much more quickly. I got my own version of that game. You play Flappy Bird, and then you get to choose. Would you like to slam your mobile phone into the wall? Yes? No? Yes. And then it does, your cell phone looks like it slams into the wall, and then you have to buy Flappy Bird over again. Anyway, Where the hell was I? Okay, you're also going to see something else interesting, too. I want you to do one problem all out, because you're going to notice that there's a pattern in the standard deviations. Sometimes the standard deviations stay the same, but it's the mean that changes, which causes this coefficient of variation to change. And you notice where I was pointing, trying to get you to notice that you should see some of the standard deviations coming out to be the same number. The coefficients of variation would be different. Like, for example, see this standard deviation right here at gross? I will bet you that that's going to be the same standard deviation you see at operating income. You have to calculate it to see if I'm right. But once you know that, that when you take away variable costs, the CV stays the same. The secret is that when you take away fixed costs, the standard deviation stays the same. Did you get that one? Let me say it again. When you take away variable costs, the CV stays the same. But when you take away fixed costs, the standard deviation stays the same. Now think about it. Standard deviation measures the spread of a distribution, right? It's a measure of how it spreads. Okay. I stand you right there, and I hit you with a taser, 50,000 volts. You go, okay, now I take you over here, and I hit you with 50,000 volts. You're not going to spread out anymore. I just shifted your mean. You follow it? So again, if you're watching closely, CVs stay the same if all you're doing is taking away variable cost. Standard deviations stay the same if you're taking away fixed costs. Now, the CV won't stay the same because you're dividing by a different number, the mean. You follow it? We'll finish this up on Thursday. That's all I have for you. Thank you.